The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Great. Thank you. So I've been exploring the topic of the hindrances in the last times that I've been here. And so I'm going to continue that topic today. So far, I've covered and talked about four of the five hindrances. The five hindrances are, or the hindrances in general, are states of mind that tend to get in the way of our meditation. They tend to create conditions in our mind that keep us from being fully present, keep us from being able to really fully meet what's happening right here and right now, because we're kind of stuck in our minds and our thoughts about the five: something we want, sense desire; something we don't like, ill will; sleepiness, restlessness is the third. Sleepiness is the third and restlessness is the fourth. So when we're sleepy or tired, we can tend to not be able to connect. When we're restless, our mind is kind of agitated. It can be hard to connect to the present moment. And the fifth hindrance is doubt. So this is the one I'd like to talk about today. But just to give a little bit of a context around the hindrances, we think about something that hinders our experience, in particular our meditation, and we think that we have to get rid of it in order to be able to be present, in order to be able to experience what's happening right here in the present moment. That's our idea about a hindrance. If it's hindering us, we have to get rid of it. But in terms of the way the meditation works, the way the mindfulness and awareness work, there's a different kind of shift that's possible. And this points to what, you know, the Buddha taught what he called the middle way. And so if we think about, you know, either being caught in the hindrances as being, you know, something that's keeping us away from the present moment, and then we have to get rid of them in order to be in the present moment. A middle way is, what might it mean to actually be aware that this hindrance, that this state of mind, this wanting, this aversion, this sleepiness, this restlessness, this doubt, is actually that we are aware, oh, wanting is happening right now. Aversion is happening right now. Sleepiness is happening right now. This is kind of this middle way. It's not like thinking we have to actually get rid of them, but it's also not like buying into them. It's not kind of being lost in either the story of those states of mind, lost in the story of I have to get this thing, I want this thing, and it's a problem that I don't have it, or have to get rid of this thing's a problem in my life. That's kind of being lost in the story. It's that that takes us away from the present moment. But it is possible in the present moment to know, oh, this is what wanting feels like. This is what aversion feels like. And so this middle way is the possibility of being aware, this state of mind that's usually called a hindrance, that usually obstructs mindfulness, we can actually be mindful of it. And when that shift happens, that middle way, where we're not trying to get rid of it, but we're also not buying into it, we're right in the middle, knowing it's happening right there in the present moment. When that a possibility happens, those hindrances are no longer functioning as hindrances. In fact, quite the opposite. They're actually allowing the mindfulness, the understanding to grow. There can be learning happening around these hindrances, learning about how we get caught, how we struggle. learning about how it feels to be in a state of desire or aversion. And that begins to help help our kind of system, our organism, begin to learn and reorient about what do we actually want to be doing in our present moment? What do we want to be doing in our lives? You know, there's pieces of our beliefs, our views that kind of obstruct what's, this is where the obstruction is. It's in the believing, it's in the views that it, in wanting, for instance, you know, wanting to have something, the belief around wanting is that if I get that thing, I'll be happy. I need that thing to be happy. And so the mind is kind of projecting into the future possibility of happiness, projecting into that, and not really aware that actually right now the experience is pretty painful to be in that state of wanting, to be in that state of imbalance. And the mind is kind of willing to forego happiness here and now for the possibility of some happiness in the future. And so as we begin to actually recognize, oh, this is what it's like to feel wanting, to feel greed. This is what it's like to feel aversion. This is what it's like to feel sleepiness or restlessness or doubt. The it's like it adds additional information to our system that helps us to reorient. It basically helps our system to reorient. It helps our there's understanding that grows with that, that helps our minds begin to like change the direction of our the ways we habitually function. And so as we begin to explore these hindrances, as we can bring awareness to them, helping yourself remember, right, if I'm aware that aversion is arising right now, that's okay. The practice is actually working in that moment. When we're aware, for instance, that aversion is arising in the present moment, it's like when we're not aware that it's that aversion is arising in the present moment, it's like aversion is driving the bus. Aversion is deciding, helping, is creating the decisions, it's creating the actions, and, you know, we're just kind of along for the ride for that. When we can become aware that aversion is present, it's like we take aversion out of the driver's seat. And there's the possibility of a little more wisdom entering into what direction the bus goes. So just recognizing that shift from being caught in a hindrance, being caught in one of these difficult states of mind, and knowing, oh, this is what's happening right now. It takes a little bit of trust, and this is actually trust is kind of the opposite quality of mind to the doubt, which I'd like to explore more today. So it takes some trust to recognize or to hold the space that it's okay for aversion to be arising as long as I'm aware of it. And so this trust helps us to learn and allow a little bit of wisdom to enter in and help to direct our course, the course of our minds. So doubt. Doubt is, I think, one of the most challenging of the hindrances. The Buddha gives analogies for doubt. Actually, he gives analogies for all the hindrances, which I won't go through right now, but he has two analogies around doubt. One related to a bowl of water. That if you're trying to see your reflection in a bowl of water, to look in the bowl of water, to see either your reflection or to see what is in the bowl of water, doubt is as if the bowl of water is full of mud and it's been stirred up. So it's just this muddy, murky mess. So very difficult to either see your reflection or what's in the water. So that's one analogy for doubt, is this clouding of the mind, kind of a muddy quality. And his analogies are so appropriate. They really express something of the state of the mind, that when the mind is in doubt, it can feel really cloudy, like you can't see 2 feet in front of you. It's just like this murky space, can't figure out what to do. So that's one of the analogies for doubt. The other that he offers is, he said, doubt is like you're lost in a desert. You know, in a desert, there's not much that can orient you sometimes. You know, you especially if it's like nighttime in the desert or a cloudy night in the desert, you know, no access to the stars or the sky, you're just in this space, not much to orient you. And the state of mind, he says, about being lost in the desert is that you might take one or two steps this way forward and think, that can't be right. And then you go, well, let me try that way for one. No, that can't be right. Well, let me try that way for one or two. That can't be right either. So we're just in this wavering mode, this kind of, you know, this vacillation that feels like it can't move anywhere, but it's vacillating and it's stuck. So that's another quality of the state of mind of doubt. It's got this kind of vibrating, vacillating quality. What do I do? How should I do that? Should I do that? Should I do that? Should I do that? So the state of mind of doubt is actually, it's pretty, it can actually obstruct itself. It can obstruct our ability to know we are in doubt. And that's one of the reasons why it's so challenging. And another reason why it's so challenging is that sometimes the thoughts associated with doubt, like, oh, which direction should I go? I should go that way. No, that's not right. Let me go that way. No, that's not right. Those thoughts can be somehow seemingly connected to some kind of discernment. Like, we're looking at the situation and saying, this is what I need to do. Oh, no, clearly that's wrong. Let me do that. Oh, no, clearly that's wrong. So there's a little bit of this belief that wisdom is in the mix sometimes when we're caught in doubt. And so as Joseph Goldstein sometimes says, doubt can masquerade as wisdom. So this is something to be aware of. For me, the most helpful way to begin to recognize doubt is happening, because it is a difficult state to recognize that it's happening, is to begin to recognize both the kinds of doubts we have, the things that we tend to doubt, and the kind of stories, the thoughts related to doubt. So doubt in this sense, in terms of being a hindrance, you know, that there's different kinds of doubts. You know, we might have doubts about our personal lives. Should I take that job or that job? You know, that kind of thing. Or even, you know, simple doubts like, should I like have tomatoes or beans for dinner? Or, you know, just the mind kind of stuck in this state. And so we can begin to get familiar with this wavering quality. It almost, you know, the state of, what's the word? It just left me. Where you're procrastination. That's the word. The state of procrastination may have a little bit of this quality. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, I don't want to. It's like, maybe I should do that first. Oh, maybe I should do that first. So, you know, this wavering quality of mind, it does tend to get in the way of being present, because our mind is kind of in this middle kind of jarring like state. But the kind of doubt that's most obstructive, most hindering for the practice, is doubt about the practice. And this is where we really have to begin to learn the kinds of doubts, the stories of doubt, and begin to also learn when these stories are related to doubt and when they're actually related to wisdom, because they're both in there sometimes. So We can have doubts about many kinds of things related to the practice. We might have doubts in the teaching, what the Buddha taught. You know, it's like he taught nearly 2,600 years ago, you know. What can he have possibly to say about the concerns of the present modern day? And how could he possibly have spoken to the kinds of agitation I have around using the internet, for example? You know, he had no idea about the internet. How could he have possibly, how can he speak to that? So that's one kind of question, is doubts about the teachings. Then sometimes doubts about the teachers. You know, the thoughts around, you know, what do these teachers know? Maybe there's a better teacher out there. I'm sure if I had the right teacher, I would be enlightened by now. Or I would at least have some kind of deeper sense of concentration in my practice if I had the right teacher. So again, doubts about, you know, what the teachers are saying, the teachers themselves. Then doubts about the practice itself. You know, this the kind of, we offered so many different kinds of practices. You know, there's the metta practice, there's the mindfulness of breathing practice, there's practices of open awareness, and you know, the kind of doubts about the teaching might kind of manifest as like, well, you know, okay, I can kind of pay attention to the breath, but what on earth does this have to do with, like, being mindful while I'm having a conversation with my partner and we're having an argument? How on earth is this going to be helpful? So in the midst of, like, cultivating this practice of mindfulness and breathing, doubts might come up about its usefulness, about its effectiveness for other areas of our lives. And then there's doubts about, related to that in a way, you know, what practice should I do? You know, like, we have taught different kinds of practices, and so sometimes we might be in that wavering space. It's like we pay attention to the breath for one or two. Oh, clearly not the time to be paying attention to the breath. I should do some metta practice. We do a little bit of metta phrases. Oh, well, this isn't working. I should probably, like, maybe I should try open awareness right now. Okay, yep. Oh, nope, I should go back to the breath. That's obviously not working. That kind of just trying something, this is very akin to the lost in the desert. You try something for a few minutes, it's like, that can't be right. Let me come back. Let me do something else. So these are different ways that we have doubts. And then one of, I think, the most pervasive ways that we tend to have doubt is not so much about the teachers, the teachings, or the practice. We think, well, yeah, it works for everybody else, but it doesn't work for me, or I can't do this. Something like that, that we doubt ourselves. We doubt our ability, our capacity to do this practice. So these different kinds of doubt will often come with certain thoughts. And I kind of named some of them with each of the kinds of doubt I mentioned, but the beginning to recognize the story of doubt is, I think, one of the most helpful ways to recognize doubt is happening. And so one of my keys for myself is, if I find myself thinking about the practice, thinking about how does this work, what should I do, what's next, how does this practice work anyway, and what do these teachers know? If I find myself engaged in thinking about the practice with respect to how can this possibly work, or what should I do next, that kind of thing, then it may be that doubt is present. There's some other kinds of thoughts about the practice that aren't so much about doubt, but they're more we get caught by some kind of understanding. Like, we recognize in the moment of experiencing the breath just how fully we can be present for it, and see in that moment, oh, actually I see how the breath changes as I have different emotions. And it might be we get this little aha of, wow, now I see how this might connect to being present when I'm having a conversation with my partner. And we get this little spurt of energy that's like, wow, this is so great. I'm going to like be able to practice all day long, and this is fantastic. This isn't about doubt, but it's also taking us out of the present moment. So not all thoughts about the practice are thoughts about doubt. Some of them are actually connected to confidence. Some of them are connected to discovery. And so it takes a little discernment to recognize. But I would say often the doubt kinds of questions, the doubt thoughts tend to have a kind of oppressive feeling. You know, it feels like, oh, this doesn't work. This is never going to work. I can't do this. It's got that kind of quality, whereas the other kind tends to have a more expansive feeling. It's almost in the neighborhood of the terrain of excitement, which has a very different quality than this kind of oppressive feeling. And so we can kind of check into what's the quality, what's the state of the mind as we are having these thoughts, and just check into the thoughts themselves. While we are caught in the thoughts, so if we can even just begin to recognize, oh, that's a doubting thought. Again, that's a little bit of the shift from being caught in the thought, believing essentially, yeah, I do need to make this decision. I do need to figure out which practice to do. And obviously, these teachers don't know what they're talking about. And maybe I should do some other form of practice. When we're caught in those stories, when we're caught in the belief around those ideas, we are not connecting to what's actually happening in the present moment. We're not aware of what's actually happening in the present moment. But if we can recognize, oh, this is a doubting thought that's arising right now, right there it shifts. It's that shift from being in the doubt driving the bus to being aware that there's doubt in the mind, and a little bit of wisdom can begin to help to steer. So we can actually recognize, oh, this is doubt. This is the biggest support for working with doubt, that we just simply recognize it. We're not asked to, I think this is a big point around doubt, because we can particularly in our Western culture, you know, there's a kind of a discerning quality that we bring to looking at things and evaluating things and determining whether this is helpful or not. And that we're not asked to let that go. We're not asked to let the discerning quality go. And so one thing that I want to point out is that when we are practicing with doubt, we're not asked to dismiss the doubt. We're not asked to say, oh, don't doubt and just do this. But we are asked to recognize, okay, this is what's happening right now. There is doubt in the mind, and here's what's going on around that. These kinds of emotions are happening. These kinds of thoughts are happening. And to open to what's happening while doubt is happening. This can help us to begin to recognize perhaps some pieces of the doubt do have some discernment, and some pieces of the doubt are just simply, I can't do this, this is wrong. And so opening to the doubt itself can help us to tease apart what part has some wisdom, what part has some discernment, and what part is just simply this wavering, vacillating quality of mind. So, working with doubt, once we've discovered, once we have recognized, oh, this is doubt, this is the biggest hurdle to get over. This is the biggest piece to get over. I can just actually know, oh, doubt is happening right now. And if we can even do that, that's really, really helpful. Just the simple recognition, doubt is happening right now, will serve you immensely, even if you don't do anything more, even if you don't have other ways to engage with it. But I am going to offer some other things, some other ways to explore and practice around doubt. So one of the things that doubt tends to do is to keep us from practicing. We are reflecting, thinking about things. What should I do? What's next? How should I do this? Rather than actually doing it, rather than actually engaging. And so sometimes it can help to do a little bit of reflection, to recognize, okay, I don't know personally, perhaps, that this works. I mean, I think some of the times the questions are, the doubt is about, well, how is this going to work anyway? You know, this notion that being mindful of anger somehow helps. When I first heard that, I thought, what? How on earth would that be any use? Won't that just make me more angry? And so there was this doubt in the mind that came from basically not understanding how it works. But I had read enough information and talked to a couple people that said, yeah, this is really helpful. It has worked for me. Try it. And the books were saying, yes, try it. And I'm like, okay, we'll just do this like a scientific experiment. I don't see how this can possibly work, but I'm willing to run the experiment. So this is a way of kind of countering doubt. This notion that, you know, if somebody or some teaching says, try this, and you just have no idea how it would work, then there's a little bit of you know, the mind thinking, trying to discern how it would work. But sometimes we can't really understand how a practice works until we actually step into it. And so we have to take a little bit of a leap of faith there and try it. So that's one piece, is like, am I willing to run the experiment? Am I willing to step into that? And that's actually the beginning of the quality of confidence that is the doubt's opposite. This quality of, yes, I'm willing to try this. And so this willingness is the beginning of releasing some of that doubt. Even if you're not willing to fully sign up and say, yes, I believe, you don't have to do that. But the willingness to try it. Okay, I can try this and evaluate for myself. Is it helpful? Does it actually work in the way that they say it will? And actually, in my own experience, like the first few months of practice, exploring anger was my very first practice, and I did it primarily in daily life, not so much on the meditation cushion, but just noticing, you know. And it was not very long before, while I wasn't able to articulate how it worked, I understood that it worked. I could see that there was less anger in the mind, that there was less being caught up in that like mind just going into a rage. It was like there was much more capacity to hold, right, this is anger right now, and to be able to let some wisdom have some choice in the matter. You know, instead of being caught and frozen in anger, not able to do anything. Oh, anger's happening right now. Well, what do I do? I don't know. I guess I can go back to work. Kind of like just, I can set that aside right now. This is wisdom that allows us to do this. And so as we begin to engage in the practice, we begin to understand maybe not so much how it works, but that it works. And that begins to be a support for us to let go of doubt. So at first we may simply have to kind of take the leap of faith, you know. It's like, well, I don't see how it's going to work, but I'll give it a try. But after we have had a little bit of a taste for ourselves, and in my experience, it doesn't actually take very long if we're willing to play with these teachings, play with this practice of awareness in the present moment of what's happening. It doesn't take very long before we have a little bit of confirmation. Yes, this is actually helpful. And then when we have that confirmation ourselves, it's like we can draw on that. And so doubt comes up. It's like, right, why am I doing this again? when we have that question, if you've been practicing for a while, that question still keeps coming up. Have you noticed? It's like, why am I doing this? Why did I decide to sit this week-long retreat? What's going on? So we still have those thoughts coming up, but we now have some of our own experience to draw on. So sometimes it can help to reflect, how have I found this helpful? Just to remind yourself, I know this is helpful. These are things I've seen in my practice. I've seen that, yeah, when I let my attention take in, anger's happening right now. Over the course of time, there's a lot of lessening of that. So we begin to be able to use that as a support for being willing to run more experiments, basically. So sometimes, too, we can begin to more directly connect to the experience of doubt itself. What's happening there? Sometimes doubt is connected to other emotions happening in the present moment. So when we recognize, okay, yep, there's doubting thoughts happening, sometimes rather than just exploring that or feeling that wavering, sometimes we can check in and say, is there something else going on here? Is there something else happening here? On one retreat, I felt like I was caught in a state of doubt. And I decided we had a period after the guided meditation in the morning where we could ask questions. And as I came out of the meditation, you know, she was opening up the opportunity for questions, and I began reflecting, how do I phrase this question about doubt? And so trying to describe to myself, how do I speak about this? What's going on? And I noticed, as I was trying to frame this question, that every single way that I framed the question began with the two words, I'm afraid. And after some time of that, I recognized, oh my gosh, actually there's fear happening here. I hadn't noticed that there was fear. I didn't ever actually even get to ask my questions, but basically I was present while I was trying to articulate something about the doubt in my mind and noticed, oh, there's actually some fear there. And as I then went through the rest of my day, I noticed little flashes of fear everywhere. Little bits of, oh, this can't be with this, or oh, ooh. And as I began to open to the fear, I recognized I can actually be present for fear. And so there was some connection or some story that was going on in my mind around fear that led to doubt. And so we can check in. I mean, sometimes this kind of articulating in our mind, well, what is, if I were to ask a question about this, what would the question be? Sometimes that can uncover some other things that might be present. Or sometimes we can simply settle back and say, okay, I know there's doubt here. And then just, is there something else here? Like, it's almost like just open up the lens and check in, you know, what is there something else going on? Is there something else going on here? As we begin to see that sometimes doubt is connected to an underlying or a related, associated emotion, we may be able to just tune into that. As I did, as I described around the fear, just tune in, oh, this is what fear feels like. Okay, this is what's happening. And perhaps begin to see how uncomfortable we are with that state. And might even begin to see something of why that experience begins to trigger doubt, begins to trigger the thoughts of, I can't do this, or this isn't working, or what should I do? One of the greatest tools, not only recognizing that doubt is happening, but the possibility that we have of just staying connected. Okay, I see that doubt's happening, and I see this fear's happening. Can I just know, moment to moment, fear, oh, this is what's happening, fear, oh, fear, that's what's going on. Just moment to moment recognizing this is actually what's happening in the present moment. This is a quality of sustaining the attention over even just a few moments. Doubt actually doesn't stand much of a chance when we are able to sustain our attention, because doubt feeds. Doubt's nourishment is unawareness. And as we can begin to just simply even know, oh, doubt's happening right now. Doubt's happening right now. Oh, doubt's happening right. Oh, doubt's happening right now. What else is happening? What does doubt feel like? Oh, doubt feels like grief. Oh, grief. Oh, grief is happening right now. Grief is happening right now. As we begin to sustain the attention, doubt doesn't have anything in which it can put its roots. So this is a very helpful tool. Be willing not to dismiss it. Again, you know, that when there's doubt happening, sometimes it can have enough power that it is not going to just simply, you know, it's got enough of its arguments marshaled, right? It's got enough of that there that it's maybe going to counter if we just try to say, oh, doubt, you are just doubt. That's all that's happening there. You don't, it's like that, those arguments are just going to come surging back and say, no, you're wrong. And so it's kind of like we have to allow that. It's like we're not dismissing it, but opening to, oh, this is doubt, and here are its beliefs. What are the beliefs happening around doubt? We can be aware of that too. You know, we don't have to dismiss it. What we are asked to do is to be aware, to know what our minds are doing. Even doubt might be willing to allow some awareness to be present for itself. And then, to its surprise, it recognizes that it can't. It can't stay there. And yet, again, you know, this willingness to meet the doubt, we begin to recognize or understand, oh, some of these things, like I'm struggling so much right in the present moment, trying to be with the breath. Struggling so much, and there's doubt coming up. Should I be doing this? Is this the right practice for me? And so some of that's coming up, so there's some doubt coming up. And if we can recognize, okay, there's doubt coming up. Okay, there's doubt and the breath, doubt and the breath. And we see that, and we begin to recognize, oh, I'm trying too hard. I am just like clamped down on that breath. That's what's making this so hard right now. Oh, maybe there can be a softening around the breath. And so some of that doubt can actually contain a little bit of discernment. But presence of mind is needed to begin to tease apart the part that says, this is a bad practice, this is a wrong practice, from the part of the mind that is actually recognizing some aspect of the way this is working right now is not helpful. And so we begin to allow the mindfulness to help that doubt be untangled. So that's probably enough. Let's see if there's other questions, if there's questions. Yeah. And would you pass the mic back? I don't think it's on.
It is not on. It is on. Okay. I haven't had much in the way of general doubts about the practice. I've occasionally had specific doubts about either specific teachers or specific other practitioners. And they're kind of interesting. There's two teachers that I've seen one day only, guest teachers that I had significant misgivings about things they were saying, but then on two very different levels. And one of them, I said, I think I have some significant philosophical disagreements with this person, but I think I could still learn a lot about meditation practice from them. Mm-hmm. And so I might, you know, come back. And then the second one, it was just a complete turnoff. The person really seemed to be using Buddhism as a weapon to bash Western culture in very sweeping general way that I just felt not comfortable with. And he's the author of a best-selling book on Buddhism. But I just, after that session, I said, I'm never attending any session with this person ever again, period. I just it was a cutoff. And the other one was actually 3 years before I began meditation practice, so this would have been, I guess, 98. There was a coworker who practiced meditation a lot, and it seemed that his meditation practice did make him more calm, cool, collected, focused, and courageous, but it was not making him wiser. And I was not alone in saying this. I think there were three or four fellow coworkers who felt that some of the time that so-and-so spends meditation would be better spent learning how to do his job properly. And it was a sort of a delighting. I mean, I did pick up meditation practice 3 years later because of some real serious crises in my life, and I had an intuition it would help. My mother had been a meditation practitioner for many years before. It seemed to be helping her. So, but just, you know, there are glitches. And I guess I meet a few people who seem to have very high expectations of immediate results with meditation that I actually think are not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe if you place too high a burden on it, it can be a problem as well as having doubts.
Well, it can lead to doubts, having those high expectations and having them not fulfilled.
Right.
Then we can think, well, this doesn't work.
Well, yeah, there's one person I told 10 years ago, I said, look, I'm not trying to sound like a paradoxical Zen koan, but, you know, I think you're going to get more out of meditation if you lower your expectations. And I'm not aware of big doubts about the practice in general, but I've just seen specific situations where
those kinds of things you're talking about, again, that's a place where we can use our own discernment, you know, to recognize is it actually getting in the way of my ability to be present, these doubts. And that's one question there to look at. If we're caught in the story of, oh, well, that person, you know, they don't know, you know, what they're doing, and, you know, so if we're caught in that, then that doubt is getting in the way. It may not be that we have to say, oh, I believe actually that person knows what they're doing, but, you know, it's like, oh, what's happening right now is that there's some sense of judgment, there's a sense of maybe some compassion that this person is not seeing something clearly. So that's what's happening right now. So that's a big piece of it, is to just recognize when are these thoughts actually in the way of the presence of awareness, and when not. And, you know, the thing about the teachers, again, you know, actually I was thinking of next week, there's a I said that we don't have to let go of discernment here in this practice. You know, that actually there's one teaching where the Buddha, kind of in this way, you know, people were, this group of people were at a town that was kind of at the crossroads of a lot of, you know, traffic flow, and a lot of different teachers came to town, kind of like California, and there was a lot of teachers in town, and they would say different things. And sometimes they would contradict each other, and sometimes they would say things like, that, you know, only what I'm teaching is true, what everybody else teaches is wrong. And these people, when the Buddha came to town, they decided, well, let's just not start by taking in what he says. Let's tell him what's going on here. And what he said to them is, it is fitting for you to be in doubt here. Doubt has arisen about a perplexing matter. And so, to again begin to recognize when these questions are related to discernment and when they're related to confusion. Well, I mean, they can create confusion, but when they're related to something that is in the way. And so there's a whole sutta that the Buddha talks about. It's a beautiful discourse, actually encouraging us to use our discernment in our practice, not simply take what somebody else teaches, but again, to perhaps be willing to try it on and look for ourselves. What happens? Do skillful states of mind increase? Does the mind get more peaceful, more wise, more balanced? Does the mind get more caught? So we can begin to discern for ourselves. And so that question, I think we have to ask that question for ourselves too in this day and age. There's so many different teachers. So not necessarily doubt per se in terms of getting in the way of the practice.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel fortunate that I met the teachers that rubbed me along the wrong way after I'd been doing meditation for 14 years. That would have been very early. Because the one that I said was a total terrorist, if I'd met him on my second meditation session, I might not be.
Well, and that would have been doubt. You know, that would have been letting a belief kind of get in the way of seeing something bigger, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, in the back.
A beautiful talk this morning. Totally understand what you were trying to say, but let me take it, the $35,000 foot view. You're talking about hindrances to being mindful in the moment. And that seems to be, around this practice and hindrances, doubt is just one of them, and you're exploring that today. But I'm always stuck with the idea is, if we're just stuck in the moment, if we're mindful, if we're conscious at the moment and just now, when do we get to plan the future?
We plan the future now, aware that we are planning now. It's possible planning the future doesn't necessarily mean we have to be lost in the planning. We can know, yes, thinking about what I need to do tomorrow is happening. Thoughts of the future, thoughts of the past happen now.
Right.
The only things that we can be aware of, the only thing that happens is happening now. And so we can, there's a kind of a belief or an idea sometimes that certain things, certain activities of mind, like planning, for instance, it's not possible to be mindful of them. And so that's a doubt. It's not possible to be mindful while planning. One thing that I've seen for myself is like, if I ever have this thought, it's not possible to be mindful while X. I do not believe that thought anymore. Instead, I turn it around. How might it be possible to be mindful while planning? And actually what we see there is that if we are mindful while planning, there's a lot of information there. It's like as our thoughts go down this pathway, think about, well, what about that option? And what about that option? There's a lot of kind of feedback as we think. You know, it's like that. Those thoughts, it's like we have this capacity to forward think. And as we do that forward thinking, it lands in our system and we have some resonances with it. Ah, yeah, that one feels helpful. Ooh, thinking about saying that to that person. Oh, that one doesn't feel so helpful. And so actually being mindful in the moment while we explore future thoughts, past thoughts, is actually helpful.
Oh, okay, that's helpful to know. It sounded like that we're so focused on being mindful in the moment and conscious of what we're doing, that it doesn't leave us time to plan and do
that
job, we need to send out our resumes, we need to plan that vacation, we need to eat tomorrow, we need to get cooked tomorrow,
yes.
And all those things.
And we tend to have a habit of not being mindful in those plans, but it doesn't mean that it's not possible.
Oh, okay.
And so we do. We live our lives. one phrase that came to me, I think it was a couple days ago, I was teaching this retreat. And the focus of the retreat was a very open style of practice where we're really learning, how do we be mindful? How can we be mindful in everything? Everything that we do. And one of my teachers in this form was asked, well, you know, about walking meditation. Well, how do you practice walking meditation? And my teacher responded, well, I don't practice walking meditation. I practice awareness while I'm walking. And so it's just, that's a different flip on it. And likewise, practice awareness while planning. Practice awareness while cooking. Practice awareness while drinking and moving and driving and going to the grocery store. Practice awareness while living. So it's possible. It's possible.
But often what happens is while we're cooking, we're planning and trying to be mindful. It gets,
it gets complex.
Multitasking. Us guys
and it's possible to actually mindfulness can be aware of, as mindfulness gets stronger. You know, there's this, when we are having to do the mindfulness to remind ourselves, right, be aware. Be aware, be aware. That activity actually does kind of keep us a little more limited in what we can be aware of in a way. So multitasking while we are bringing in mind, awareness, it actually kind of begins to shut down some of that multitasking. And yet, as mindfulness gets strong, as it is just going, and it can strengthen to the point where it is just a quality that's kind of like riding on, it's just reflecting whatever's going on in the mind. That kind of mindfulness can know multitasking. Even multitasking. And yet, not initially, you know. So initially we do have to do some of this engagement, you know, aware. And that, I think, is part of the idea, part of the reason why we have this idea. I can't be aware of planning while I'm mindful, because at first it does take this kind of effort. Remember the present moment. And that tends to kind of supersede the possibility to be aware while planning. So it's an exploration, and as the mindfulness gets more continuous, it begins to be able to take in more and more that's happening in the present moment with less and less effort. And that's a ways, and you know, it is like, you know, the expectation of having that happen right away, you know, that's going to be frustrating. But just to hear that this is possible, and as I said, you know, just continue to ask the question: how might it be possible to be mindful while that's happening?
That's perfect, and that's exactly what I want to hear, because it was always something that troubled me, that we got so caught into the present that, you know, we weren't focused, possibility of focusing on the future or what we need to do to survive in life.
Yes, exactly.
And able to hold those at the same time with that mindfulness. And maybe even, as you say, that mindfulness in the future where multitasking is
just part of mindfulness. Just know, yes.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
So it's time to stop. So thank you.